Committee. Thank you for joining us today. Just a reminder, we'll be back at 4 o'clock to entertain a couple of other concepts here today. Remind everyone in attendance that this is not a session committee. This is simply a committee for the recommendation of these concepts, or a lack of recommendation, as relating to the special session. This time I'm going to open a public hearing on LC 15. And I'll tell you what I would like to do here today. I want to just talk to the major players involved with this concept. I know there has been a whole lot going on the last hours on this. I'm not exactly sure what has been going on, but that's what I'd like to do here, is find out. I'd like to have the major players in this come forward, and I'll call you up here in just a moment. We don't want to really belabor this today. I have a feeling the final form is not before us. In fact, I know it isn't. And I'm not sure when or if the final form will be before us anytime soon. We're obviously running out of time. I expect that we will go to one-hour notice on hearings tomorrow, but I have not been notified precisely of that yet, but that's my expectation. So we are running awfully short of time on some of these things, and so what I'd like to do is, as I say, call up the players, some of the players from the sign-up sheet yesterday, and then Co-Chair Atkinson and myself will probably have a statement to make after we hear from you. Let's go ahead and look at yesterday's sign-up sheet here, and I'd like to call forward Lisa Trussell, Tim Nesbitt. Is Frank Ritchie here? Okay, Frank. If you three would come up. Just a few moments ago, we received 15-1. We didn't have that until just a few moments ago, and I don't exactly know how that happened. But again... This is obviously not in its final form. I'd like you to comment on what's going on right now with this bill. Tim, would you like to begin?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee. I'm Tim Nesbitt, president of the Oregon AFL-CIO. I have written testimony for you, which I will not read line by line and try to respond more to your question. But I do want to point out that, as stated in the testimony, this proposal arose not from any particular ideological bent or political ploy. It arose from the perceived need and a newly perceived opportunity to address that need. The need, obviously, is based on our highest in the nation unemployment rate, 129,500 jobless workers in Oregon now. That's up from 71,000 a year ago. And the perceived opportunity arises from the fact that because we've had a well-funded and prudently managed unemployment insurance trust fund, we're now able to say, as I think Mr. Ritchie will confirm, that an additional $87 million could be spent from that fund without triggering any increase in employer rates this year or next year. In addition, as the Congress continues to debate and stall over action on economic stimulus, it's become clear that there's a return of funds to the states that's due to occur this year, which if the Congress does nothing, which we think might be the best bet, the most likely outcome, the default mechanism, if Congress does nothing, Oregon stands to receive $55 million by October in these federal UI funds called REDAC funds that can be used for benefits. And when you put together those two pots of money, the margin in our trust fund and the additional that we're almost certain to receive from the Congress. The only debate in the Congress now is whether to give us more or give it to us sooner. So worst case scenario, we should have that $55 million by October. When you put together those amounts of money, there's $142 million there, which we believe can be put to good use by improving and expanding benefits for a temporary period of time for 1 year to help cover more of those 129,500 workers who are unemployed and help them meet the needs of their families when right now the average UI benefit is only $240 a week. We had come up with four ways of doing this. Your LC 15 contains all four. By expanding eligibility to part-timers, by giving workers credit for the most recent earnings, by creating an extra 13-week extension on top of the 13 weeks we're now receiving jointly funded by the feds and the state, and increasing benefits by $20 a week. In response to objections we heard in the last week, principally from the Restaurant Association, we were willing to take out the part-timer piece, although that would have covered workers who are not now eligible and workers for whom employers pay the payroll tax. The objections were such that we agreed to take that piece out and instead make the increase in the across-the-board amount $25 a week. All of that will spend approximately $115 million of this available $142 million. We think this money will be well spent both to meet the needs of laid-off workers and especially well spent to stimulate our economy and accelerate economic recovery. Because when you think of it, and we have workers here and they've been showing up the last couple of days, the first answer you get when you ask any laid-off worker how they'd spend that money, you hear food, groceries, clothing, necessities. They're going to be spending that extra money in their local communities, in retail stores, for those necessities. And in that sense, it is also immediate and effective economic stimulus throughout our state in our local communities. And finally, because UI benefits are taxable, there's even a little bonus here in the really tough job you have of dealing with balancing the general fund budget. It's estimated that the feedback to the general fund in additional personal income taxes from the $115 million in our package would be $8.5 million, a little more money on the table to help balance the general fund budget. We're really pleased to have the support of AOI. We have a meeting of the minds here on this because none of this is what could be called a diversion. It's all a direct use of benefits within what the feds and the state currently define as allowable and permissible. We think the case for it is compelling. We think we have here a win-win opportunity to help workers, to help our economy, and a third win can be added to the equation to help the general fund budget as well. And that point of agreement we have with AOI, I'll let them speak to, but we're hoping that we can move forward with this as a consensus item. We think it makes sense and will be an effective form of economic stimulus. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ritchie, I'm asking you to look in a crystal ball, and this is tough for anybody to do, but about the READ Act funds. I know Mr. Nesbitt has indicated that odds are that we should get those, just simply a debate of how much. What would happen if we approved this legislation and the READ funds for one reason or another didn't come through?
Mr. Chair, the proposal that you have in front of you, LC 15, and actually I think the other language, LC 15-1, does include in it a sunset provision if the READ Act distribution either does not occur at that level or if it comes with strings attached to it that wouldn't permit its payment, its use to pay unemployment benefits. So as this proposal is drafted, should the READ Act mechanism either not occur, should the distribution not occur, or if it came with strings attached, which some in the past have, then the proposal sunsets these benefit enhancements as of October 31st.
Mm. Okay, thank you. Committee, do we have any further questions for Mr. Ritchie right now? Okay, thank you. Lisa?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I want to thank you for allowing us the opportunity to come and talk to you about this concept. There's some of the points that I was going to cover, Tim has already mentioned, so I just want to get to the more substantive issues before you. This proposal was designed looking at what the forecasts are for going forward that the Employment Department had. And it's our understanding, based on forecasts, that with or without this proposal, come January 1st, 2003, employers will move to Tax Table 4. Which tax table 4 is kind of the optimum tax table because that means employers are paying in the same amount that's being drawn out. And last session, you'll recall, you passed the tax table restructuring that significantly leveled the increases from a huge one to a more modest one. So that's in place, and basically tax table 4 is the old tax table 3. The payouts under this proposal, and we think that needs to be clearly understood, is that the bill is drafted so that the payouts under this bill do not impact an individual employer's experience rating, which is to take care of the perception that it will have an adverse impact on any one category of industry. And as we indicated, as Tim has indicated, the original package contained more elements in it that we thought would be good elements. But there was a genuine concern over having a sufficient cushion in the fund on August 31st. And the key to August 31st is that's the date the Employment Department determines the tax schedule for January, the following January. So we did some modifications so that there would be approximately a $30 million cushion in there, which gave the Employment Department some comfort. It is designed, and you've indicated one of them, but there are some safety guards put in. It's got a one-year sunset from when it's implemented, so it would be roughly the middle of next March. It has the provision in there that should we not receive at least $55 million to use for benefits from the READ Act, then there would be no new ones qualifying the last week in October, which it's on a calendar week rather than a monthly date. So those two safeguards are already built in, plus the fact that it won't impact an individual's employer's experience rating. And we think that the proposal sticks within the bounds for which the fund is dedicated, which is to provide benefits to workers who are unemployed through no fault of their own. We're in an extraordinary time as far as our employment and unemployment rates are in Oregon, and that's the reasons that we're supportive of this package, and we hope you'll support it, too.
Thank you. Committee, do we have questions? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I know who Mr. Ritchie and Lisa are.
Mr. Chair, sorry, I should have remembered to do that. For the record, my name is Frank Ritchie. I'm manager of unemployment insurance and programs and analysis in the Employment Department.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I'm Lisa Trussell with Associated Oregon Industries.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. I just have a quick question for a clarification, and I don't know who can answer it, but I'm looking at LSIS 15-1 and the 15.
Mm-hmm.
It says $20 per week, and he's discussing $25.
I might say that this is in a process of metamorphosis here, and I would not invest yourself terribly in what you see before you're up.
Okay. Answer my question.
That could be something going on here. Okay. Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very concerned about putting bills on the in the process at this time that will create a lot of conflict and impair our ability to get out of this building. And my question to you is, have you developed broad-based support, small business and others? I have had no contacts in my office, and I've been in this building all week. So if the information that I've received pre this hearing is indicative of what other legislators have been receiving, I'm concerned that this could be a very controversial issue that could make it more difficult to get through this special session.
Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, we have, as you know, AOI represents business in Oregon, small, large, 89%, only 2% of our members employ over 100 people. Everybody else has less than that, and approximately 89% have fewer than 50. So we have, it fits within our board of directors' directives on use of the UI trust fund.
Further questions? Okay, thank you. You'd stay close. I appreciate that. Next up, I'll have J.L. Wilson and Joe Gilliam, please. Gentlemen, if you'd identify yourself for the record prior to speaking, please.
Sure. Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing the business owners of the National Federation of Independent Business. You have before you what I will call the small business counter proposal, the small business proposal with what you've just previously been introduced with. As a general principle, I do believe that it is better to have some of this money circulating in the economy than sticking around in a trust fund where it's not doing much good. And I do agree with the general premise from which we're all working that this money would do much better for the state if it's circulating in the economy. What you'll notice about our proposal, it does share many of the same qualities that were proposed to you, and I will outline the difference. Our proposal grants an additional 13-week benefit extension, as the previous proposal did. We do have the credit for the most recent earnings, as your previous proposal did. Instead of the $25 per week weekly increase, our proposal suggests a $15 per week increase. You'll also notice for employers, there is a one-time tax rate reduction this year of $22.6 million. And the final difference between the two proposals that you'll see is that ours sunsets on December 28th of this year, making it effectively a nine-month program. As a representative of the small business community, I feel that this proposal more accurately reflects small business principles, principles of cost consciousness, principles of moderation, given the fact that I don't want to even come close to touching all the money there is available, given the fact that there's no indication of where the economy might be going. If it, in fact, it gets worse or not, that is something that it's hard to foretell at this point. So I don't want to flirt with spending more money than has to be spent in this situation. I think some is prudent, but not all. I also believe that this proposal represents a little more equity. I don't want you to harp on the point, but I also don't want you to forget who pays unemployment taxes. That is largely your small employers across Oregon. And I also would like to illustrate that the financial difficulties across the state are widespread. And I also would like to point out that I don't believe that it's correct to assume that money is better spent or better utilized by one group of folks than another. By way of illustration, and I don't know if I should tell you this, but I will. In the last 4 months, NFIB membership has been reduced by 2,000 members. 2,000 small businesses, and I should also back up and say the number one reason, they're out of business or they can't afford it. That should tell you something. The financial difficulties are widespread around the state. They don't apply to just one group of people. They apply to everybody. We introduced the $22.6 million one-time tax reduction as a way to help those employers who are currently trying to keep the employees that they have on board right now. That's all I'll mention about the proposal that we've forwarded. It's in many respects similar to what's been forwarded by AFL-CIO and AOI, but we consider it a little more moderate and a little more comprehensive in the benefits extended to all parties involved. And with that, I will happily answer questions.
Thank you. Let's hear from Joe, and then we'll get to asking the questions. Joe, if you'd introduce yourself, please.
Sure. Mr. Co-Chairs, my name is Joe Gilliam. I represent the Oregon Grocery Industry Association. We represent companies from the retail, wholesale, and manufacturing industries here in Oregon, many Oregon companies and some national companies. We have a wide variety of people. Our employment base is very large here in the state, from small 10-person, 3-person stores to Fred Meyer's and Safeway, which are two of the top 5 employers in the state. So we have quite a wide berth that I represent. We favor this proposal that JL just went through. We oppose the first proposal. The first proposal we don't believe is prudent enough and causes us concern because it doesn't leave a big enough cushion that we would feel comfortable with. We agree with some of the principles here and some of the goals of trying to take some of this money and stimulate the economy. And while I always appreciate Mr. Nesbitt's help to the grocery industry, the $20 proposal just doesn't seem to fit quite for us. We believe that if you put some extra in benefits for the workers out there, but also tie into a rate reduction for employers, you're putting money directly back into their operating budgets immediately. Not a trickle down. It's not wait for a check. You'll be able to do this right now. But we believe the more prudent approach to this is a 9-month approach. See how things go. Make sure your ending balance as of August 31st is correct, as Lisa was saying, from AOI, so you don't trigger a tax increase. And it's just a little more conservative approach as you go out there. Our proposal would also not affect individual experiences and those types of things. The biggest component difference is you're giving some recognition to those who pay the taxes by reducing that rate and giving immediate stimulus to those payrolls that are keeping people or trying to hire people or just sustain people. So we really would urge you to look at the second concept, and there will be a draft at which time LC can crank it out.
Thank you. Do we have questions? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple. How many employers does NFIB represent?
Thank you. Co-chairs, Representative Tomei, when the legislature adjourned, we had close to 14,000, and now we're under 12,000.
Thank you. And I guess this would be to you, Joe. I would assume that most of the people who own your biggest employer, Safeway and Fred Meyer, that most of the people who own shares of these companies don't live in Oregon. Is that true?
Oh, Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, I don't know the breakdown of who would own Fred Meyer stock or Safeway stock. The Safeway stock, I would say, the majority of Safeway stock would not be owned in Oregon. It's a national company.
Right.
Fred Meyer stock, I don't know the answer to that. And you got Kroger, but I don't know how they're structured, to be quite honest with you, and who would own that stock.
But if I may follow up, Mr. Chair, thank you. So theoretically, some of this money would go to shareholders in other states, rather than, as I'm hearing from you, JL, that it would be appropriate if it might go to small business owners, but it seems like a proportion of it would go perhaps to shareholders in other states. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's highly unlikely with the amount of dollars we're talking about.
You're not looking at a proportion, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, follow up, please.
In terms of the amount of sales and the amount of stock you'd have out there in a national company, the amount of money we're talking about would be so small.
But
you're not going to see it.
But I'm looking at proportion, right? So if it's going to people who pay into this proportionately, then Safeway and Fred Meyers would be paying proportionately much more into this unemployment fund than would, say, a grocery store who only employs 3 people.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, that's true because you have a cap on income that you pay up to $25,000. So you're going to pay, you know, if you have 30,000 employees versus 10 employees, yes, you're going to pay more into the pot. You don't keep paying above that $25,000 level. Once you hit that income level, you're capped out.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Committee. I'd just like to share a little something with you here, and that is I appreciate what Senator Messerly said just a few moments ago, and that is that we are really here for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to rebalance this budget and go home. As things have turned out, we've got a number of concepts before us that we didn't expect to get, but we have, and we have an opportunity to deal with those. I want to speak just simply for myself in this particular case, and that is that I personally appreciate what AOI and AFL-CIO are doing here. I've kind of taken by surprise. I didn't know it was coming, and I have had to scratch to find out much about it in the 3 days that I've been here. But nonetheless, with that said, I appreciate it. We've got a number of hurdles to overcome in this process if we're going to do anything for unemployed workers in the time that we have left. And again, I want to say that I'm speaking for myself here, and my co-chair will speak in just a moment. I do sympathize with the plight of these workers. I think we all do. And I think that as far as these concepts go, generally speaking, we appreciate what all of you are trying to do. But just speaking again on my own behalf here, if we're going to make something happen, it has really got to coalesce quickly, and we need to get away from any rancor that may exist between large businesses, small businesses, and so forth. We've got to coalesce on that and get this thing going forward. I want to tell you again that I really appreciate, JL, your proposal here to modify what AOI and AFL-CIO have done. I want to say that the quickest way through this committee, in my opinion, is for the committee to adopt these concepts, fold these concepts into what AOI and AFL-CIO are doing. If that happens, as far as I'm concerned, any ability that I have to move this thing through the process and get these folks their additional 13-week benefits and credit for the most recent earnings and an increase in benefits by $15 a week, I am more than willing to get that thing punched through as quickly as I can if these concepts are folded into the concept as it was brought forward to us. So that's my pledge. That's my pledge, to try to make that happen if we can fold these things into it. And I think that's the secret of making it happen, quite frankly, in this legislature. So with that said, I'd like to turn it over to my co-chair. I know he's got some thoughts, too.
I think that there's significant interest, at least speaking on behalf of the Senate, in finding a way to, with the 13-week extension. I think there's interest. There's also significant interest in making sure that those REED funds are available and used in Oregon. And that's what keeps this thing moving along. The breakdown has been, though, yesterday, when this thing got, Tuesday when we found out about it, I asked, at least on the Senate side, who knew that this thing was coming. Nobody knew that this thing was coming that I spoke with. Wednesday, we took all the interested parties out in the hall before the hearing and said, please check with the Senate before we progress. One member of the Senate here, Senator Deckard, had one person of that group talk with them. Other than that, the Senate still is largely in the dark. And so I think the heartburn that's going forward here is that we're taking a large concept, trying to move it forward without support. And I would hate to lose the 13-week extension because we're not working the process the right way. That's where my frustration is. And again, speaking on behalf of the Senate and speaking on behalf of my part of the caucus, there's four caucuses represented here. This committee was arranged for the one simple purpose of finding bipartisan things to move through the process. Nearly all of the other bills and LC concepts that have got to us have either come through the committee that some of you are on, that Senator Metzger and I co-chaired. I believe there's another version in the House on economic stimulus. A lot of the ideas that have got to us before Tuesday were already on people's radar screens. And if you're going to make a big move like this, we need to have everybody bought into it. It needs, at least on behalf of where the carpet is orange, people need to know that it's coming. And so that's a frustration. I want to share that. I think there's interest with the REED funds. I think there's interest with the 13-week extension. But there's a lot of details here, especially with regard to small employers, that have to be met.
Thank you, Senator. Any final comments? I'd like to close the hearing and move on here in just a moment, but any final comments? Okay, thank you. We'll close the public hearing on LC-15, and you folks go do some good work, and we'll be happy to do what we can to help. Okay, LC-9, right? And are we ready for work session? Or a public hearing? Let's do it. Okay, I will open a work session on LC-9.
It's on the news.
Okay, committee, we've got LC-9 before us, and we also have amendments here today. New version of LC-9, and I would like someone to explain to us about the amendments here. Who would like to do that? Ken, would you like to do that? Ken Armstrong will. Yes, and staff, please.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to be sure that everyone is looking at the LC9. This doesn't have a dash number like the other updated versions do, but it has a date of 2-6-0.
Okay.
And we did write in a new version, but if you got it from someplace else, you just need to look at the date.
Okay, thank you. Ken, if you would reintroduce yourself and tell us about this again.
Happy to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ken Armstrong, representing Seattle Northwest Securities, and I also sit here today on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. There are two changes that you see reflected in the 2602 version of LC9. There were changes that I mentioned briefly to you yesterday when you had the preliminary hearing on this, and they are all on page 3. There was one change that is on line 19 through 23. And what that language does, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is the old language provided that PERS by rule could set some minimum amounts or minimum levels of paying off the unfunded actuarial liability. This change provides that under no case will the minimum amount preclude a school district from paying off its entire UAL. So in other words, if a district had $2,000 total of UAL, yet they had set by rule a minimum amount of, let's say, $10,000, they wouldn't be precluded because they haven't met the minimum from paying off their entire UAL. And I will also say that in speaking briefly with a representative of PERS in the hallway before this hearing, they took a look at this language and verbally told me that they were fine with the language. The final change is under Section 2, where there are the administrative rule process for PERS to implement this. As I mentioned yesterday, we wanted to provide a time frame within 90 days where PERS would complete that rulemaking process to enable the school districts that choose to participate in this program to take advantage of the current interest rate climate. So those are the two changes you see reflected in LC9.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Armstrong? Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. And Mr. Delaney nods in assent here with Ken's comments. Okay. Let the record notice that he's nodding. Okay. Thank you. Okay, we are in work session, and I'd be happy to accept a motion.
Mr. Chair?
Representative March.
I move the committee draft LC9, new version dated 2602, be introduced into the special session as a bill.
Thank you. So moved by Representative March. Do we have any discussion? Do we have any objection? All right. Adopted. Thank you. We'll close the work session.
I'm
not.
You're good.
We'll close the work session on LC9. And committee, we have nothing else before us now, but we sure hope to at 4 o'clock. And so we'll see you back then.
Here at 4 o'clock.
Here at 4 o'clock.
Thank you.
Committee's in recess.
Good. It's warm.
Okay.
Let me look again at it.
Probably.
Nelson. One more.